Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby and this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Thanks, as always, for listening. We were joined by a former Sunderland defender called David Corner. You may not know his story, but we think you'll be interested in what he's got to say. It's an amazing tale. And the playwright who's been working with him, Jeff Brown. More on that, of course. We were joined by the chairman of South Shields. They've got a celebrity patron, and he told us a little bit about that and what the club are up to. And Gabriel Clark, documentary maker and TV presenter, joined us to chat about his fantastic new film, Finding Jack Charlton. Beyond all of that, we had some clips of the midweek from 2007. And Andy and I, of course, as always, had a bit of a chat about various things. Here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy.
All the chat is about Bryson DeChambeau and his massive drive that he's going to dominate the course. And the Sun very helpfully told us that his 403.1-yard drive was 3.5 football pitches, 12 blue whales, 3 bottlenose dolphins, or 33 London buses. Like, I can't work out what 400 yards is because I've never walked 400 yards in my life. It's brilliant, isn't it? And they've even laid out the blue nose dolphins like end to end. What about their blowholes?
Not, I mean, you mean graphics of them? Graphics of them? Not, yes. That would be cruel, wouldn't it? Surely.
that would liven up the Masters.
Yeah, it certainly would.
Mark Williams, the snooker player. I don't know if you saw this. He stormed out of the German Masters. And you think, oh, really? Where's German Masters? Where is that? Hamburg, Dortmund, I don't know, Berlin, somewhere nice like that. No, no. Milton Keynes, apparently.
Is this because of the virus? Or I take it, is this to be?
Well, it must be, I suppose, yeah.
You don't know. Otherwise, Barry Hearn's geography is well off, isn't it? Imagine that. Yeah, German Masters this year, Streatham. And then we've got the Egyptian Masters, and that's in Darlington. It's all taken. You're right, Dad, says Eddie. No, it must be COVID related. Must be.
It is, I'm sure. But it does look a bit odd that he'd walked out of the German Masters in Milton Keynes after accusing Paul Davidson of an illegal shot. This, the referee and Mark disagreed about this, that the ball had. Davidson, no, who's it? Davidson's cue had hit the yellow. But don't they have VAR in snooker? I suppose they don't.
They televise it, don't they? I mean, I suppose you can't ask the referee to pull off his white gloves and then go and watch the TV replay.
That'd be good. At a Stockley Park.
I've got something for the listeners, Andy.
Oh, good.
Afternoon.
Yeah, carry on.
And it comes under the banner of, well, you could have said, it just struck me reading Tony Adams' comments today that Arsenal were in the box seat for Jude Bellingham. Basically, all the groundwork had been done to sign him. But then when Mislintat left and Edu came in, he got lost in the mix somewhere. He said he didn't know anything about the player, Edu. He didn't know much about English football at that stage. But don't you have a handover? I mean, surely in something, it's a multi-million pound business, isn't it? Like every football club. And it struck me, if, you know, you wouldn't want whoever's running that side of things at Arsenal in charge of the intensive care unit, would you? So you come in on your morning shift, anything to tell me? Oh, he's already gone home. Oh, yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to say, bloke in bed 3 is having a heart attack. You have a handover in virtually every job you do.
Not in football, though. Not in that job, because the last thing you want
is the other
someone else.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, to get credit for your work. And you're going to another club, so you're thinking, well, I'm not going to tell him about Bellingham. I might want to sign Bellingham for my new club.
Well, I mean, there must be a few people that were still there in the handover that said, oh, well, we're having a very good close look at Bellingham. So it did strike me that there may be something for the listeners to get stuck into today when a vital piece of information was not passed on. So, well, you could have told me.
Sadly.
I did mean to tell you the house was burning down. I didn't know. Anyway, so let us know. TalkSport.com, text 81089, tweet TSHNJ. Michael Naylor's been in touch. We are going to be chatting to David Corner later on, the former Sunderland defender. And he's straight in. He said, let me be first to put forward a TV format for David Corner. We haven't asked for it, but he said, how about it's Masters Week, Amen Corner, where David plays golf with religious figures who get dock shots for all blasphemy. Well, they wouldn't blaspheme, would they? After a poor shot, that's possible, Mike. All right, then, David Corner. Do, yeah. I mean, it's a play of his life. It's a fascinating story. I was not aware of this. And it's quite a troubling tale, really, and it's a story that's worth telling. So, as is the life story of Jack Charlton, especially his time in Ireland and his latter years, a brilliant documentary by Gabriel Clark. We've both watched it over the last couple of days. I know Adrian Durham, again, thought it was absolutely magnificent. So, we'll be chatting to Gabriel a little bit later on. You'll get a chance to see that later this month. There's some weird and wonderful transfer stories coming out of Italy, and we'll try and get the strength of those and look ahead to their friendly tonight, as well as Holland versus Spain, which is the pick of the friendlies. I think it's going to be on Sky if you need a football fix tonight. And they've had a few problems in the Dutch camp with COVID, so we'll tell you more about that. Could be a slight knock-on effect for Premier League players that are in the squad as well. So more on that later.
Sadly, Edu did know Pepe. Might not have known Bellingham, but he did know who Pepe was, and they signed him for $72 million, and now he's not happy.
That's that classic thing of going on international duty and sort of spilling the beans, isn't it, Sam? I wanted more game time. You know, I need to be playing more. But
how about play better?
Well, this is what I would imagine a lot of Arsenal fans are probably shouting that at the radio now. You know, the players might want to play more, but they have to prove they should be playing. And from what I know of the Arsenal fans, you know, he's been a bit hit and miss so far, hasn't he? Oh, good news on the Arsenal front, though. Normally, I wouldn't rejoice in any Arsenal news, obviously, as a Tottenham fan, but I was very pleased to see Gunnosaurus back.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's absolutely great news, isn't it? There he was doing a thing with a junior Gunners. I think his contract might be slightly different now. He needs Keir Jurabshin, doesn't he? Keir get behind Gunnosaurus? He'd be on great money, and his future would be
but
secure.
Nobody else would sign him. He can't go to Juventus.
You can't PSG. Use that as a stick. Unless he gets what he wants. Well, he's only got to pull the shirt off. Wouldn't that be a good story if he's suddenly Athletic Bilbao's
Paris Saint Gunnosaurus, their kit on. That would work.
I can't think of any other football club that has dinosaur connotations.
Can I suggest it's a corner? Basically, certain people, you're faced with a line of people and you have to guess which people are members of the corner family.
Okay, and that's what you shout when you go along the line, like it's a corner. You shout one of those.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
We're going to take you back to the 1985 League Cup or Milk Cup final, as it was then. Cue Barry Davis.
Good play by John Dean. It's still in. Shannon. The tackle. Oh, and it's an own goal. Came off Chisholm. Asa Harper claiming it. But it got a deflection. And what a start to the second half, right in front of their own supporters.
So there we are. It proved to be the only goal of the game. Norwich beat Sunderland 1-0. And in the build-up to that goal, there was a little moment where then 18-year-old Sunderland centre-back David Corner trying to shepherd the ball out by the corner flag. John Dean nipped in. We see it often. Kept the ball alive. And the rest is history. It led to the winning goal. Now, it was the sort of thing that can happen to any player. And it wasn't a kind of serious mistake, but it had fairly long-lasting consequences for David Corner. And we know that because there is a play of his life. It's written by a TV presenter and now playwright Jeff Brown. And both David and Jeff join us. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
David, first off, I mean, little did you know, just sort of, as I said, it's not a catastrophic error. It was the sort of thing that can happen in games. It didn't lead to the winning goal, although there was a penalty miss, wasn't it, by Clive Walker later in the game? Yeah, you might have thought the focus would have been on him. But you had a tough time after that, being a local lad, didn't you, when you encountered fans in years afterwards?
Yes, well, first of all, it was a dream come true for a local lad to play for his hometown team in a National Cup final at Wembley in front of 100,000 people and 9-10 million on the TV. It was a dream. But obviously, with that mistake, things turned into a bit of a nightmare over the next 35 years. So it hasn't gone on long, really, just 35 years.
Wow. And you say you were attacked in clubs a few times by people that people never forgot it. I mean, and even as a police officer, in years later, people would... You'd encounter people who remembered it in odd circumstances.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, on two occasions I was assaulted where I spent 12 days in hospital.
God.
12 days and nights in hospital at one point, breaking an eye socket, a cheekbone. On another occasion I was assaulted at a pub where my front teeth were knocked out, 6 stitches above my lip. So they weren't nice. In the main, they were just verbal abuse, which I could handle, you know, even though it wasn't very nice and intimidating. It's kept us going out at times. But they weren't nice times at those particular occasions.
No, of course.
It's really hard to believe people could react like that. And interestingly enough, reading about this, the referee, Neil Midgley, told you something quite revealing, didn't he? Or told John Dean, actually.
Well, he actually told John Dean. Jeff got this story from another former player, he didn't tell me until just before the play came on stage for the first time. And he said that there is a twist in the tale at the end. And
I had to do a rewrite, unfortunately.
Yeah, Jeff, it's interesting. How are you drawn to this story? Did you know David's story, or how did you hear about it?
Yeah. Well, I'm a TV presenter now. I've covered football up here for sort of 30-odd years. Mm. I was on the Birmingham Post and Mail at the time of the Cup final, but I was there. And obviously, I came back to the North East and covered Sunderland for a lot of years. Knew David's story, knew all the horror stories about it. And then, it was just... It was something that just kept repeating. I mean, even a few years ago, Dave came on to do a half-time draw at the Stadium of Light, and a few people were still booing. And I thought, why can't people get over this?
It's
so long ago. Every journalist thinks they've got a great novel or something inside them. And I'd enrolled on a playwriting course, and they always say, write about the things you know. And just one, they always say, have your best ideas at night. I woke up one morning and thought, David Cohen, that's a great story. Why not? So I approached Dave, and he was a bit bemused at first, I think. Yeah, but then he came on board, and it was just about getting a bit of redemption for him as much as anything.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, David. Has it been cathartic, this play being produced and people looking upon it much more sympathetically, I'd imagine, now?
Without doubt. It's certainly got some redemption, as Jeff says. Go around now, and people, I think, see things in a different light these days, you know. I was just pleased there was no social media around at the time, because it would have been probably a lot worse, you know. But certainly people look at me now and can't believe how I was treated by others. And they are a bit sympathy, empathy, and they all look on my side now. So it's not too bad. It's turned out okay in the end.
Jeff, you had a successful run of the play up in the North East, but of course the virus has put paint to that at the moment. But there's an audio book coming out, is that right?
Yeah. So the thing about plays as well is that, you know, once you've written them, the hard part is getting them produced. Once you've got it produced, it's on, and then it's gone. At the back of my mind, actually, my boss came to see it, and when we revived it a couple of years ago, and he said, look, you could turn this into an audio book because it's a monologue.
Mm.
I've narrated it, so I'm Davey. I've narrated the story, and the official launch is next week, which coincides with UK Anti-Bullying Week.
Right.
So it's out on iTunes now, and it's raising money for all profits go to the Foundation of Light, which is a charity charity arm of the football club, Sunderland Football Club, which looks after underprivileged families, needy families in the North East, of which sadly there are far too many.
Yeah. David, were you pleased with the casting? Was the person playing you sort of handsome enough for you? Were you pleased?
It was actually quite frightening. Because everybody who came, there was actually people sitting on the table with myself, and they couldn't believe they had to take a second look. They looked on stage and then looked at me because they thought I'd got on stage, you know? And I couldn't believe, because I was quite upset at that, because the lad who played me was 10 years older than me, you know. And but he was very uncanny at the time, because he did look a lot like me. So, but he was very, very good.
Yeah.
He wasn't a football fan either, which was great. And I did, when we did the first read through, I said, you know, do you think you can cope with this? And he said, I'm an actor. That's what I do. I was like, yeah, fair point. Steve Arnott was his name. Steve Arnott from Line of Duty.
I was going to say, yeah, that's quite an infamous name there, of course, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, Jeff, this is the sort of story you'd expect from South America or Italy. Were you surprised that the Sunderland fans had the depth of feeling? Not all of them, obviously. I would imagine a lot of them were quite sympathetic, but the ones that did have a go at David.
I think it's probably not peculiar to the Northeast. I mean, it is, football is a passion up here. But it probably didn't help Davey's cause that he's 6 foot and ginger, and so very, very visible. And you know, people do pick on things like that. He's got ginger hair, it's an easy target. And also, I think there's an element of, you know, people up here love to see local lads getting into their team and doing well. But when they don't do well, there's a hint of jealousy, a bit of, you know, I could have done better. How come he's in the team? I could have done that. I could have been playing for Sunderland and I would have done a better job than him. But the point of the player was, you know, one mistake, literally a split second. We all make split second decisions. Yeah. And you know, generally 990 times out of 1,000, you'll brush them off. This one split second decision sort of defined Derby's life for, he says, 35 years. Wow. He still gets people today reminding them of it.
And finally, Davis, it was a bit of a sliding doors moment. If John Dean had come over and you just kicked that into touch, how different do you think life would have been? Would you have? I mean, you had a knee injury, didn't you, which stopped your playing career, so it wasn't related to this. But
yes,
it was interesting,
yes,
how life would have been different for you had you just tapped a ball into touch.
Oh, definitely so. I mean, how things would have changed, I don't know. Chris, I might not have been on the radio today, you know, if I had to kick it out. People might have recognised me walking down the street, but I wouldn't have had the abuse. But I would never ever change anything what's happened to me. If somebody says, give me the option of playing in a National League Cup final for your hometown team, who I supported all the way through all my life, you know. I used to stand at the Roper end watching the types of Gary Rowell, and I ended up playing with Gary Rowell, you know, on the same pitch, same team, and it was just a dream come true. Just on that note, Gary was actually sold for Norwich on that particular day, you know. And it was a great time, but there were some nasty times after, but it's levelled off now, so it's not too bad.
That's good. Well, look, good to talk to you, David, and good to talk to you, Jeff. Let's hope that, you know, when we're through all this, you can maybe take this on tour again and people can see it around the country. So thanks for joining us, both of you.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot.
There we are. There's Jeff Brown there, TV presenter and playwright. David Corner, the former Sunderland defender.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
We stay in the North East, having spoke to David Corner, the former Sunderland defender, about the play of his life. And we spoke yesterday about Wrexham and Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, the Hollywood actors looking to invest in the club. A bit of stardust, a bit of showbiz stardust. It doesn't go amiss when you're running a football club, and that's true of the Northern Premier League, South Shields FC, who have just seen Jade from Little Mix, Jade Thirlwall, invest in the club. Here to tell us more is the club's chairman, Jeff Thompson. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So this is not the first time she's had a connection with the club. She's already sort of involved because she's local, isn't she?
Yeah, she's a South Shields girl. She's our honorary president. And, you know, she's certainly never forgotten her roots. She's, you know, a patron of a local South Shields charity called Cancer Connections. And she's invested in her own bar and nightclub in the town. But yes, she's already got a connection with the club. And I'm delighted to say she's been very supportive.
Yeah, this is a part of a whole movement, isn't it, that you've got to get people to invest. I gather 750 people have already shown their support.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously difficult times with COVID, but we planned this way before the COVID outbreak, and we pulled the idea back in April, which was when we originally planned to launch it. Anyway, we relaunched it in about a month back now. The idea was always to allow our club to become increasingly a community-owned club, and that's what we're about. You know, that's what we're setting about now. I'm delighted to say, as you said, you know, over 750 people have invested. Jade making a sizable investment, which is terrific. And we've already raised approaching £300,000. And again, every single penny raised is going into the club. So, you know, the fans and basically football fans generally have an opportunity to be part owners of a football club.
Was this launched, Jeff, sort of once the virus had taken hold, or something you'd planned before the virus hit?
No, thank you for saying so, because I must stress it's been always our long-term plan. We've always said we want to create a sustainable community-owned football club. That was always my objective. And unfortunately, the COVID outbreak back in sort of March delayed matters, and we did pull the plan back then. But certainly, you know, we felt we couldn't delay any further. Delighted the way that, you know, fans have responded, and obviously certain celebrities, including Jade particularly. So it's great news that it's gone well. As I say, we set a target of £250,000. We've raised now approaching £300,000, and the opportunity is still open for a further sort of, I think it's around 15 days still. So yeah, everything's gone well. And as I say, it was always part of a long-term plan, a community-owned club. We deliver an awful lot, not just, you know, the first team results and the effect that has on our town and on our community, but we've got our two academies, we've got our charitable foundation. So the club tries to represent its local town and does an awful lot of good work within the community.
And Jade, of course, is very, very busy with the Little Mix, but does she get time to come down and watch the game? Obviously not now, but I mean, prior to COVID.
Yeah, she has been. Yeah, absolutely. And her family come along regularly. So I'm pleased to say, yes, she does come to games, and she does provide that sort of, you know, visible support as well as the financial contribution that she's made.
And you don't have to run out to shout out to my ex or anything like that. There's no conditions.
Yeah. I think there's a bit of a scrum about who wants to sit next to her, of course. But she comes along and very discreetly enjoys a game of football and some, you know, some hospitality at the club.
So, I mean, sorry, Andy, carry on.
Oh, sorry, Paul, I didn't mean to interrupt you. There's a picture of Jade wearing the shirt, and she looks great, and obviously probably a lot better than some of your supporters, I'd imagine.
A bit harsh.
Well, including myself, I have to say, yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Yes, she said, you know, again, she's been incredibly supportive of the club, and yes, she comes along and she's done one or two photo things for us, but and more importantly, has come along with her family and enjoyed a good day out and enjoyed the football and enjoyed our match day hospitality. So, you know, I couldn't be more proud of the fact that she's supporting us.
Yeah, it's great that she's supporting the local area. That's brilliant. And just one final one. You've had a decent little cup run that sadly just come to an end, haven't you, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't to be on Saturday. We played well, I felt. You might have seen the highlights just on sort of BBC Sport, but if you'd seen our streamed highlights, I think we gave Cheltenham, with the greatest respect, a very good game. We got it back to 1-1 after about 17 minutes, and then we had a couple of chances that might have got us, you know, got our noses ahead. But it wasn't to be. All credit to Cheltenham. Our lads did us proud, and we've got to dust ourselves down and now refocus on, well, the trophy and the league, but of course, only when football's safe to return, hopefully in early December.
Well, Jeff, good to talk to you. All the best with the fundraising, and thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Shall I put you two down for a ticket next to Jade at the next home match?
Well, if you like.
Oh, very much so, right. Yeah.
when we can socially distance. Yeah, when we don't have to socially distance, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cheers, Jeff. Thanks very much. There we are, Jeff Thompson there, the chairman of South Shields FC.
Jade sounds great, but it was a piece about Little Mix yesterday that caught my eye in one of the showbiz columns. And I often think that people who write these columns, I don't know, they go home and have a sort of like think about their whole lives, because this is what this bloke wrote. He said, "It's hard to recall life before Little Mix."
I don't know.
Really?
So it's a strange thing to say. BLM, is it? I mean, and... ALM. That's the way you look at the way you view the world. Certainly it will be from now on.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Paul Hawksby, Andy Jacobs here on TalkSport. Later on this month, a fine documentary, Finding Jack Charlton, will be released. We're going to be chatting to Gabriel Clark very shortly, one of the men behind it. But before that, let's give you a flavour of the film from the trailer.
I've been a wild rover.
What's football about? You're at Wembley Stadium, and a ball is crossed from the right wing, and you go, boom.
That's his medal.
People say to me, was that the most memorable day of your life? Joys and management are totally different to joys as a player.
He's not the same, Jack. He's dementia.
I couldn't remember a lot of the memories.
And it's a shame because he's had some good memories.
Jack, perfect goal!
My dad made notes.
I'm a batterer, a fowler.
What are you talking for? On players, family and tactics. We kept them all.
Yeah, they're a fascinating part of the documentary as well. Gabriel Clark joins us now. Hi, Gabriel.
Afternoon, how are you doing, guys?
Yeah, we're good. Look, first off, congratulations. It's a wonderful film. And one of the things that makes it special, I think, is the access you had to Jack and his family in the last 2 years of his life to film. And, I mean, what a great sort of honour and a privilege that must have been for you, to be given the trust to go and do that by Jack and his family.
Yeah, absolutely. We had on board as well Andy Townsend with us, who obviously captained Jack's side in 94 and won 80-odd caps. And Andy was also helpful in that sense. But yes, Pat Charlton and John Charlton and Jack and the family, it was a pleasure working with them. And it was, as you say, Paul, it was a privilege.
It's a great story, beautifully told. I loved it too. And the contrast between Jack's playing and managing career and his life and his liveliness and his humour to how he was at the end, it really is a portrait of what Alzheimer's can do to a person. And from that point, it's very moving.
Yes, I think as well, Andy, that one of the things that we wanted to do, as well as be authentic in documenting that, was also to show that people can live with dementia and their lives can be very busy and active. And that certainly was the case with Jack and Pat. That was something that, they certainly didn't want him to be defined by that, and that the film to in any way follow that path either. So I think we were very wary and careful to strike that balance so that when you do come back to the scenes, the contemporary scenes that we filmed, there's also something hopefully inspirational about them. And as well as gaining an understanding of the condition, you're also able to see Jack still, elements of Jack that are still very much like he always was. And I think that's something that certainly when you talk to the Alzheimer's Society and people who are involved with this on a day-to-day basis, that lives can still be lived with it, as hard as it obviously is and becomes.
Those little windows that open up, I mean, if anybody who's lived with someone and knows somebody who's had dementia will know that feeling. I experienced it with my mother-in-law. You just get, suddenly you think, where did that come from? You know, you think there's nothing happening and then they'll say a name or they'll see something, they'll react to it. And it's a jolt for you. And we see that when he watches some footage of Paul McGrath and he just suddenly says out of nowhere, watch it. He's been kind of fairly blankly watching the footage and he just says, Paul McGrath. And then there's other moments like that, aren't there, Gabriel, where you just get that little window on the fact that Jack is still there, he's still in there somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was something that we discussed with Pat Charlton, his wife, something that we obviously wanted to do, and she was happy for us to do that. And I think that is the condition. I think obviously short-term memory is very difficult, if not impossible. And that sense of detachment for the person who's living with dementia. But then when you just have those moments, obviously watching old footage, listening to music that's recognisable that goes back to your past as well. It was wonderful to see that. And I think that's obviously something that those involved with the condition encourage you to do. And there was another great moment in the film when Jack's at his local, his son's pub, and together as a family with his grandchildren, they're watching back Jack, the documentarian. And it's just a wonderful moment when you see his grandchildren disbelieving that, wow, that's granddad presenting a documentary. Mm. I think it was the same for the family there. It wasn't the more typical Jack the footballer. It was this, and that was one of the other reasons that really appealed to me about this documentary as well, was Jack was much more than just a manager and more than just a footballer. He was interested in many aspects of life and where he came from. And we were able to thread that in that scene, which hopefully was really inspiring, I felt, at that particular moment.
It's also, Gabriel, a celebration of his career and from the World Cup and before that, but an awful lot about his time with Ireland and just how important a figure he was in Irish football and in Irish life. I mean, that's the thing. You look at the idea of an Englishman in that environment, as you point out in the film, in that climate at that time, for an Englishman to go in and manage the Republic of Ireland team, you know, there was pushback, but they learnt to love him.
Yeah, extraordinary, and something that almost becomes more extraordinary as the years go by. Obviously, the Republic of Ireland playing England this week, and they'd love to have a team that was similar to the one that Jack built. I think that was one of the original thread for doing the documentary, was this sense of the Englishman who went to Ireland and within 9 years had transformed not just their football, but also the nation's self-image. And I'm not saying that. It's said in the film by people like Larry Mullen of U2, by Roddy Doyle, the author, by those who lived through it, Irish people who lived through it and experienced it. And also, I think we're hopefully able to demonstrate it with a lot of unseen footage, with Jack's notes, with material that hasn't been seen before. So a lot of what is sort of apocryphal and the sense of this Englishman who went over there and had a great crack with the players and they all followed him like the Pied Piper, but there was more to it than that. There was a lot of not only great football philosophy and wisdom that went into it, but also from Jack's point of view, I think a lot of genuine statesmanship, which he had naturally, this ability to connect with people beyond just football, which he had naturally, which I think is one of the reasons hopefully why his story stands out through this film.
I like the way you've interwoven lots of different stories within the main story and the stuff, of course, about dementia. And that's things like David O'Leary talking about how he'd been left out in the cold, but then had to take that penalty, probably one of the most pressurised penalties of all time. And then all the Paul McGrath stuff. I thought the film was very clever in that way.
Yeah, thanks, Ed. Yeah, I mean, obviously, like any film, you have to pick a path, you know, and I'm sure that there'll be those who watch the film who wish there would have been more of certain things in it, because Jack's life was so full. His son John says in the film he lived 10 lifetimes in one, and it's close to being accurate. But you do have to pick a path. Now, obviously, one of the great ironies was that one of the first players that Jack had to ostracize was the brilliantly talented David O'Leary, just because he didn't suit his idea of what a centre half should be in the team he was building and the style they wanted to play. But as he says, and he got a lot of criticism for that at the time, but by 1990, of course, David was still in the squad. When I need him, I'll call him up. And it was David who scored the penalty. And it is a wonderful little subplot in itself. And David talks very openly and honestly in the film about that. And then Paul McGrath was just an exceptional story. You read Paul's book, and which we did before we filmed with him, and it's his own story is astonishing. So we had to touch on that in some shape or form because of what he almost represented at that time, but to be a black person in Ireland at that time, in football at that time. And then, of course, he had other issues that went along with that. And how Jack managed him was its own little story, its own huge story, which peaked in 1994 with one of the great performances by an Irish player. So it was a pleasure, again, to thread that through the bigger story, as you say, and hopefully that resonates with people.
One of the other threads of the film is Jack's relationship with his brother, Bobby, and that's fascinating as well as that unfolds. And, you know, we've always understood there was a family falling out that was an issue, but you also sense, Gabriel, from watching the film, that ultimately they were very different men. You know, they were brought up in the same way by the same parents and a very strong sort of figure in their mum, but they were very different men, and that really comes across in the film.
Yes, I think the expression is united by the same blood but not the same character. Yeah, that was the case. Their relationship, you get the sense from looking back at very old footage, and bear in mind these were two very famous men, young men, by 1960 almost, when football was starting to come onto television. I mean, the Charlton family were well known at that point, largely Bobby, of course, but Jack too. And you don't detect a great deal of warmth at that time. It's to do with their background, of course, but I mean, one of the things that we managed to find some footage, though, in the film of Bobby with Jack after Ireland beaten Romania. And it resonated certainly with the family, Jack's family, because it was one of the few times, I think, where Jack was able to listen to Bobby say how proud he was of him as a manager. And that meant a lot, that moment. Of course, those moments weren't, it was rare, but it was wonderful to get that moment into the film as well.
Well, Gabriel, good to talk to you. Now, we're fans of your work, but I'd say that this is your finest hour. It was excellent. So we wish you well with it.
Absolutely brilliant.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to talk to you as ever. Appreciate your support.
So Finding Jack Chong released on DVD and digital download from November the 23rd, and we highly recommend it.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Yeah, it's very interesting, Paul, because you can tell it's International Week, because my first lot of stories were all sport. And the next time, when I look at my list here, there's virtually no sport at all. So don't say to me, oh, that's not sport.
Okay, can you bring any of it back to sport?
Well, Colleen and Rebecca, are going to be...
That's virtually
be
a sport story.
They're going to be in court next week. It's going to be a bit of light relief for all of us. But I just can't see the case taking that long. Surely the judge is going to say to the son, well, who gave you the story? And then presumably at court, they've got to say who gave them the story. That'll be the end of the case.
Have you not seen All the President's Men? Not that I'm suggesting at all that the downfall of Richard Nixon and Colleen Rooney. And anyway, you get the idea. That'll be an interesting one. We've had a couple of these emails, Andy, come in from the listeners in various areas. David Corner joined us earlier on, the former Sunderland defender, who's now got a play of his life story after a little minor mistake in a League Cup final 85 led to years of torment from people attacking him, etc. It's a terrible tale. But that hasn't stopped you coming up with you know, it's with a happy ending. Life is very different for David now. But Gavin Johnson suggests a TV format for David, Müller Corner. German football legend Gerd Müller teams up with David to research what new daring flavours consumers would like to have made to increase further the popularity of the two-in-one yoghurt dessert. Well, that's you know, Greg Wallace wouldn't say no to that as a format, so I think you could see it being made. We've got Mark Carter. Our mate Mark Carter says, corner man. David takes up a position as a corner man for Tyson Fury's upcoming fight in a new Channel 4 documentary. Yeah, that is quite literal, Mark, but you could see it being made. Corneration Street. Oh, for goodness sake, Martin.
That's rubbish.
David looks into the history of the nation's best-loved soap and talks to the actors involved. Corneration Street, for goodness sake.
You'd just call it Coronation Street with David Corner, wouldn't you?
That's what you would, yeah.
I did come up with Corner Flag. And David does the marathon and we join him just as he hits the wall and lags behind all the other runners. But thought that would possibly work, but it obviously didn't.
I've got a title but no format for Meet Me on the Corner, simply because it's a Lindisfarne song and it's a northeast thing, but I don't know.
That's true.
What would it be? Like a kind of long lost relatives type thing, a sort of something like that?
Me of Burnley. See, meet
me on the corner. Ben, yeah, David me. Corner and Ben me get together and just have a chat. And that's got a very limited format, I'd say.
Very limited.
Not much you can do with that.
I've been quite excited though, because I've been reading about the new series of The Crown. I don't know if
I'm a big fan. Andy, Well, you made me watch it because you kept telling me you'd watched it, and I thought it looked a bit soapy, and I thought, I'm not sure. But it's brilliantly made, and I know I'm a convert. I'll be there Sunday, rattling through a few of the episodes. It's very well done.
The plot this week features, I didn't know about these two, the forgotten royal cousins hidden from the world at the National Asylum for Idiots, or as we now call it, the Daily Star's letters page. Only joke.
Blimey.
But,
Blimey, it's a bit dark. No,
I should get one there for that one. And it's rubbish, and I can't even read that one out.
Okay.
What else have we got?
I've got another. I've got Adrian Durham's been in touch, Andy. He gives us
Corner
the Cob, where David Corner travels around England examining different styles of bread roll. He says brackets a cob is a bread roll in parts of the North. Yeah, we're with you on that one, Adrian. We understood. So he's up at four with Troy's trying to come up with any. I'm sure he's got better things to do. But Troy Deeney alongside Adrian at four, by the way, with Drive. Sorry, Andy, carry on.
Telling children that Santa won't come if they're naughty could cause them psychological problems later in life. And I was thinking, oh, surely not. That's something every parent uses. My own two kids with their kids do that. And I remember doing it with them. It's a great tradition. It's the only way you can control them around Christmas.
He always does, though, didn't he? They know it's an empty threat because he always turns out.
I don't know.
Which is virus or no virus. It'll be there.
It worked with my kids. It worked with my grandkids last year. I saw them doing it. It definitely worked. So that
don't worry, kids. He's coming. As long as you're good, though, because you know he sees all.
That's true.
Yeah.
So that's no good at all. Well, and
Andy's editing on the hoof.
I don't even like
this.
Any
is
of
the gold, believe it or not. This is the gold.
You've got the gold at 1:00.
Imagine the stuff he's rejecting.
You were talking about how significant the coronavirus is, but not according to historian Dan Snow, who said the coronavirus pandemic won't be remembered in history and will be overshadowed by climate change and technology. He said his view was unfashionable. I said, no, just wrong. How could you think that? I mean, sure, it's a huge... It'll always be talked about forevermore this year, won't it?
I was thinking we were just chatting about this off-air, actually, with Fletch and our producer, Jamie, who's with us in the studio. And we were just saying, you know, how long will it be before we can sign, put a bit of distance on this and look back on it? But I think there's certain things we won't take for granted anymore. I think it'll be a bit of a shift in people's thinking. But anyway, we've strayed away from other matters, haven't we? You got anything stupid for me?
Madonna's pants are up for auction.
Oh, well, that's more like it.
What would you do with them? That's what you could
wear them for work. Which ones are they? What specific about what? Which ones are they?
Let me have a look. They are a pair of black latex briefs worn by Madonna for a magazine shoot, set to fetch £7,500.
A bit creepy. Who's got hold of them? That's a bit weird.
I don't think it's Graham Budd.
It wouldn't go. It won't be a true one of his. But I'd like to see you could wear Andy, buy and wear them for work. Go on, you can afford okay. it.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport. The Talk Sport Clips of the Week.
Well, kind of. It's a little trip down memory lane. Some clips from 2007 that were found a little while ago, dusted off, digitised, and we've not heard them since. Our producer has put together a little selection, so hopefully we're going to enjoy them, and so are you as well. We begin with the former mid-morning host, John Gaunt, starting his show with a surprising announcement.
But let's do the first hour on speed.
Well, it's bold. I think
probably only take about 37 minutes.
Yeah, you got 3 hours to fill, John. So, yes.
Staying with Gaunty, here he is with Ronnie Irani talking music.
You ever been to a concert and seen somebody more than once, John?
Yeah, the Specials.
Yeah. What, more than once?
Millions of times.
Serious?
Yeah, because they were just fantastic.
Just
Dixie's
going.
Midnight Runners I saw many times. You'd be 40. So many times. Fantastic stuff. Hey, Jay, talking of which, you choose...
Bit of Jay Giles band there, so from Ronnie. Not maybe he'd seen them as well, but just didn't let on. So this is racing expert Derek Tomo Thompson with yet more surprise news.
By the way, I woke up to 3 degrees this morning.
Aye, aye. You kept that quiet, Tomo.
Lucky
you rascal.
Man. Now, for some reason, we decided to send Mike Parry, of all people, to the 2007 Rugby World Cup in France as our expert
were
host.
Were we mad?
We were. And here he is getting a bit of clog from financial reporter Henk Potts.
You can just imagine Parry doing these great interviews with these big rugby players. I mean, they must have to bend down so far in order to speak into the microphone.
Excuse me.
Absolutely embarrassing.
I was only interviewing the legend Francois Pinoir yesterday. Yeah.
It's great. Pinot Noir.
Yeah, he would bring it back to wine, wouldn't he, Francois? Pinot Noir. And Henk wasn't the only one giving Mike some stick whilst he was out in Paris. Here he is arguing with a caller.
Do you think I've come here to have a look? No, I'm not. Do you think I'm here to look at a few paintings in the Loire Museum or something?
The Loire Museum? It's great, isn't it?
He's got his own
history show.
This is Jim Proudfoot introducing a guest.
A man who knows Sheffield Wednesday very well joins us on the line now. Howard Wilkinson won the league with Leeds, now chairman of the League Managers Association. Howard, good evening to you.
Good evening, Jim.
Can't be confused.
Sometimes.
Fetch your cloth, Granville. Now, back to Mike Parry again with a caller.
And Martin, yourself, what's your business, pal?
I'm a carpenter.
A carpenter, there you go. If I was a carpenter and you were a lady, would you marry me? Anyway, you know the score.
The lyrics don't quite fit.
He could have equally have sung a carpenter's song, couldn't he? You never know.
This is a call. Sorry,
Andy, you carry on, yeah.
Yeah, this is a corner to breakfast with Anna Brazil and Ronnie Irani.
And if Scotland miss out, at least Italy and France are going to qualify, but it's Latvia and Iceland is going to put Northern Ireland out.
Latvia and Iceland. Oh, dear, no. Mark. Tesco's will be putting them out next.
Pardon?
I said Tesco's will be putting them out next after Iceland.
No. It didn't quite work, that one, did it?
Didn't do, not
really.
We're
no. with it wrong. This is Big Al getting a competition underway.
Lee, would you like to go first or second?
Second.
You'd like to go first. So Martin...
Second.
Is it A first or B second, despite what you just said? That's great. He got very angry, the caller there, didn't he? Sorry, we're laughing. We haven't heard these for Lord knows how many years. This is new to us. We normally have a dry run of the clips of the week because we're pulling those together. But this is new to us. Anyway, Andy, carry on.
And staying with competitions, here's Ronnie Irani again.
We're also provisionally going to give you a pair of VIP tickets to watch Rangers FC play Olympique Lyonnaise.
Oh, that'd be beautiful, the Italian-French club. Lovely, yeah. And finally, many things have changed over the years, but Alan Brazil's 6 for 6.30 start time to the breakfast show, of course, it's a movable feast, isn't one of them.
The Alan Brazil Sports Breakfast on Talk Sport.
Good morning, 8 minutes after six. Very well, welcome.
Just got out of the car. Park the car for me. Park the car. Ed. And rushing up the stairs, he was at 4 minutes past six. So there we are. There's
I enjoyed those.
Some clips from back in the day in 2007. Hopefully, and you have a lot to say about this, we'll have a fresh batch of clips of the week for you at around 3.30 on Friday. Coming up very shortly, we're going to be... What are we up to? We're off to the Masters. We're very much looking forward to that. Mm. Before that, Andy, we'll find ourselves with a little bit of time on our hands, so we can give you a few more David Corner. So what I'm just going to say to you, Andy, give me another 12 minutes of your gold. No, I'm only kidding. David Corner, yeah, the David Corner TV format, the former Sunderland defender we spoke to earlier on, you seem to be coming up with some nice ideas. Alexis Corner. That's a nice show. Alexis Sanchez and David Corner deliver random humorous requests to Alexa. Yeah, okay, John. It's a limited format. I'm not sure how many people really want to watch that. What's this one? About a meaty barbecue competition. Travelling America for the best meat, says Carl the Evertonian. Cornivore. It doesn't really work either, does it?
It doesn't work at all.
They've got a hole in the schedules, I understand. What else we got here? Just one corner toe. Our hero takes a tentative look into the world of the... No, I'm not going down. Who put this up on the screen? You're going to be taken off the air. Leave it there. Yeah.
We probably should.
I think we probably should. They're getting a bit darker. Yeah, that one's not suitable either. So, remember the time of day. I'd say it's the school run. I suppose it is still the school run. So, yeah, we have to be
careful.
I've got
one story. It's not funny, but it's just a sort of interest. Well, no.
Okay.
Owners of a hair salon in Oakenshaw in West Yorkshire are trying to stay open in lockdown, claiming lawful descent under the 800-year-old laws of Magna Carta.
Right.
As some sort of rights.
Did
to
she
do
die in vain?
Well,
Tony Hancock.
I was asking the wife, when do you think... I said, do you think they had hairdressers 800 years ago? And she said to me, yes, of course they did. And I was thinking, did they? When were the first hairdressers? It's just an hour. If you know, let us know.
And what's... That's going in accidental Partridge. When was the first hairdressers? But what was the conversation like? Going away this year? Well, I've never been away in my life. It's only so far a horse and cart can get. Really? Yeah, we're thinking Torremolinos this year. Do you want conditioner on it? What's conditioner? Do you want gravel on it?
It's a good point.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
my old friend Tony, his granddad was quite a character. And talking of hair washing, I don't know, I'll catch this as conveniently as I can. When he was a desert rat, he said they were forced. They washed their hair, he said, in pee and paraffin. I take it was his
really?
Own. I take it was his own. But so I don't know if they...
I'm for head and shoulders myself.
Yeah, I hope Gwyneth Paltrow's not listening because she'll be bottling that. She'll be bottling that and charging about 500 quid a bottle for it.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. We'll be back tomorrow from 1. If you can't listen, as always, the podcast will be available from around 5.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince.
I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.